Well, good morning, friends. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 18th of November. Very nice to have you with us on this fine day. And I thank you all very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure. Let me introduce the group to you. I'll also remind you that you can be a part of the program. I mean, I think you know that. I think deep down you know that. And you know that there's a very easy email address. You write to us and we'll read your letter if we can. We don't read everyone because we get so many, but we try to do what we can. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Charta. Good morning, dear friend. How are you?
I'm very good, Joe, and thanks. You know, we don't want to fool anybody. You and I talk so much that we probably talk 3 or 4 or 5 times before we go on the show.
That's right.
In the morning. And so we know, we pretty well know what each other is thinking at any given moment.
We have a can and a string. At any given moment, we can talk and figure out what's on each other's minds. But it's good to hear your voice, and we're ready to go on a whole rash of issues this morning. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is in the house. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. I'm doing very well.
Good for you. Keep it that way. Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Bob Griffin. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. And I just want to remind all the listeners that today's secret code word is catnip bubbles.
Yeah.
And if you listened last week, you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. It's the secret word. Catnip bubbles. Speaking of catnip bubbles, the woman who knows all about them and uses them in her own home, Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I have a new toy that I've discovered on the internet, which is it's a little toy that flies around, has feathers on it, so it looks like a bird, and your cats attack it. See, I'm trying to keep my cat indoors, and so distracting him. So I might have to get that.
Excellent.
Have you checked that with Rich Guthrie? Because, you know, he has a thing about the cats and the birds. You know about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's why I don't want him to go out, because they are terrible for songbirds, and so this cat will stay inside, but I want to, you know, indulge his natural instincts.
How old is the cat now? This is Freddie, right?
6 months old, Freddie, yeah.
Yeah, a very, very sweet kitten. All right, I see pictures on like any pet owner, Rosemary does a great job of posting photos.
I'm a little obsessed.
Well, good morning all, and thank you for being with us. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. All right, we got a lot to talk about. It was a busy day yesterday in the neighborhood, and somebody's creating chaos. Okay, so let's begin with the story about the president firing the top DHS official who refuted his claims that the election was rigged. So a gentleman by the name of Christopher Krebs, a top Department of Homeland Security official, who first came onto the scene in the George W. Bush administration. He left after the Bush administration and went to work in the private sector during the Obama administration, and then was recruited by the president Trump to come back and have headed the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, at DHS, and led successful efforts to help state and local election offices protect their systems for the election. Well, he said, and this was the beginning of the end, is that this was the safest election we've ever had. He said 59 election security experts all agree. In every case which we are aware, these claims either have been unsubstantiated or are technically incoherent. And he said that he believed that the security of the election was really good, and was not only patting himself on the back, but saying to all of the people who were involved across the country, did a very good job. Well, of course, the president is refuting the election results, so this didn't go down well. So the president fired him yesterday. Now that brings to questions. I want to get Alan's response, but then I want to go to Bob, because my understanding is that this also puts us in some risk now, because we don't have anybody in that job for 60 something days. So, Alan, same old, I guess, in the sense of he'll fire people who disagree with him. But this does seem to come at a weird time, and again, not completely unexpected, but still not great.
No, he expected it himself. He said so to friends, and that's been widely publicized now, Joe. He did the right thing. When he meets his maker, sooner or later, he's going to get a pat on the back for having done the right thing. Now, that's the bad news is that Trump is not going to give up. He will not. And there is some really bad news in that there are some state legislatures that are disgusting, that want to get their hands on electors, and they're making those kinds of noises. And, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I think that since Trump has no low, there is nothing too low for him, that he's going to proceed on that. And to overturn, can you imagine, overturn a dutiful election that has been duly, is the right word, done. Now that's the bad news. And the good news, it seems to me, is that Mitch McConnell and his senators, Republican senators, are beginning to do some things that I find very interesting. They're not where they should be, but they're getting there. They're doing things like congratulating Kamala Harris on her election. And as if to signal once again that they accept these results. So that's where we stand. And now over to the guy who knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, well, there's a lot there, and we're going to get into a lot of this, too, as far as there's so many aspects of the story, and we'll try to cover all of them. Bob Griffin, let me tap into your knowledge of cybersecurity, Homeland Security. So what do you make of this? Again, not a big surprise, but what are the dangers inherent in firing someone, especially at this particular time?
So there's a couple, and if I could just take a couple minutes and give some context. I actually worked with Chris for the last 6 months of my stay at DHS. I was staying for the transition before I came to the University of Albany. And Chris was on board as a senior advisor for Secretary Kelly. He had come from Microsoft. He was a really decent guy. He was somebody who you could talk to, who would listen, who came with an awful lot of experience. And he was being put in a position to fix what was sort of a broken cybersecurity process in DHS. His reputation is pretty stellar. He's the type of guy that you actually would have wanted to roll over into the next administration, even though he may have been appointed by the Trump administration. His abilities and his connections with the state and local governments was excellent. I mean, probably among some of the best in government. So you're talking about somebody who came to the government, took a huge pay cut, was there because he cared about the security of the country. So please don't sort of put him in at the category of the typical Trump hack. The position he is in, though, is absolutely critical. It is key to the defense of the non-governmental sectors of this country as far as cybersecurity. So what Chris Krebs was in charge wasn't just elections. It was the cybersecurity for things like the electric grid, for our financial services, for our supply chain. That is a huge and critically important position. So by both firing Krebs, what Trump did is that he signaled that he really doesn't care about burning the fields as he's leaving. But you also need to remember is that Krebs wasn't the first person that he fired in that agency. He cleaned out a couple of the other high-ranking members of CISA, which leaves a big gap at the top. So we're going to have growing concern about foreign interference into some of our critical infrastructure. And you also have the issue and concern about what's called borrowing. And borrowing is when political appointees from one administration try to get placed into positions of career civil service in a next administration, which gives them protections from being terminated. So there's an awful lot to play here, but there are a couple key points that I just want to go back to. You know, Krebs is the, exactly the type of person you want to have in government. And it sends a really chilling message to other folks that would have the courage to stand up to the garbage that we're seeing come out of the White House right now.
So in one of the upsides to this that was reported and talked about last night as this story was breaking is the fact that now that he has been let go and he is free, obviously not to share classified information, but would be free to assist the Biden campaign or the Biden office in their transition and help the president-elect.
It could be. I mean, candidly, it's kind of polishing a turd. I mean, it's a spin on something that's really not, this is just a horrible situation. I mean, in a perfect world, Krebs would have been there and he would have been helping with the transfer of power. And, you know, we talked last week and I'm sure we'll talk again about the fact that there has been no forward movement, real, I think, forward movement on the transition and sort of that changeover, that transfer of the reins of authority is really complex. And you need and you want people like Krebs in those positions who understand exactly how the agencies work because they actually help put it together. So I do hope that he would help with the Biden administration. I mean, I do think that he's a consummate professional, but I do think we're just trying to spin just a really horrible situation.
Rosemary.
Okay, so I'm a little less hysterical about this. It's not ideal. It's not a perfect world, like Bob is saying. It's really wrong. But Trump is getting a lot of traction by creating this chaos. There are many people tapping into their inner child who think this is just fabulous that he's blowing up things. Remember, this is why they elected him. It's why they continue to support him after 4 years of this stuff. And really, the damage in 60 days, I just don't believe it's that catastrophic. For one, Krebs is a great guy, but he's not the only guy there who could do this. If he is, then we're in worse trouble than I thought. Yes, now he can go talk to Biden, who I maintain knows a whole lot more about this anyway than Trump after 4 years in office. So I think there are bigger. I was really nervous, as Alan mentioned, about the electoral move yesterday, but that seems to have been thwarted for now. Trump, in his chaotic, mean-spirited, deadly exit from office, is exposing a whole lot of the weaknesses in the system. And it's going to be up to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to get in and codify what we thought were traditions that would always be followed. They are not. So in a way, it's a service. It's not ideal. Please do not take this to mean I approve of it, but it is not the end of the freaking world.
You know, Rosemary, not only did he go, but his deputy went also. So when you say there are other people around to do it, are we sure of that?
For one thing, the election's over. There's no election to be interfered with. And yes, I understand that the grid and other cybersecurity systems are in place, but I hope it's more than two people. I mean, I would think that there's like 20 people at least in the federal government who can handle this for 60 days. Until Biden is in control.
Bob?
There are, but let me sort of frame it slightly differently. We're at a time when it is not unusual for adversarial foreign governments to be testing our systems because they know that we're in a transfer of power and there's a potential weakness in the system. The other point that I'd make, Rosemary, is that leadership matters. And the tone that Chris was able to create at CISA, the working relationships that he was able to form with state and local governments came from his direction, and the organization followed that direction. So what happens when you get somebody like a Chad Wolf, who was put into a position like this, that is doing nothing but following Trump's line, the agency is going to respond similarly. So I do think, while I don't think it is the end of the world, like you said, I do think it is significant and needs to be watched.
Chris?
That's what I'm saying. I think it is being watched. It isn't going to be a Chad Wolf who comes in next. It's going to be a Biden appointee. And it's 60 days. That's just not enough time to do the kind of havoc that we're talking about.
I don't know. 60 days seems really long to me. So I hope you're right. Chris.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is disturbing and despicable. I'm kind of, you know, we've seen this over and over and over again, that anybody that tells the truth gets fired in the Trump administration. And it's at a certain point, you don't know what to say. You know, one thing I did think about, though, when Krebs was fired was this, I don't know if you guys have heard about it, but this Trump Accountability Project, which is this effort that was kind of launched by AOC, and it's kind of this effort that aims to kind of cancel anybody who worked for the Trump administration to make sure that they don't get good jobs in the future and to make sure that their history of working for Trump follows them around forever. And, you know, this is, as Bob has said, you know, there are people working for the administration who are trying to do the right thing. And I think that this kind of proves it. You know, there are people there who are doing good work, who are trying to refute some of the president's claims and some of the things that he's doing. And I don't think they should all be, you know, tarred and feathered on their way out.
And Joe, when we come back from
Joe,
our break,
if I could,
go ahead, Alan first, and then
very quickly, when we come back from our break, maybe we could talk about the potential for a lawsuit and Mr. Krebs. After all, we know the president has the power to fire. On the other hand, the president sues everybody for everything. And it seems to me it might be interesting to see what a couple of federal judges had to say about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob, you wanted to make a quick point before we go in 27 seconds?
Yeah, it's just, I'll just toss this at Rosemary. 60 days, you're going to feel the same when Trump forces through sale of gas and mineral and logging rights up in Alaska. I mean, that's just one example of what can occur in 60 days.
He can't do it until just a few days before the inauguration. And the first thing Biden can do is nullify those or put a hold on logging or drilling or whatever it is in the Arctic. Trump cannot do any damage there.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. We're already getting them. panel@wamc.org. We'll get into all of these issues and to more depth right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I got a letter from James who says, what are you folks going to do when Trump is gone? Whether you know it or not, you sorely need him to fulfill the vast emptiness in your lives. You, of course, can never acknowledge this consciously, but that doesn't diminish the hard truth. Alternatives? How about talking about, say, the governor's $25,000 raise in the meantime?
Sorry to burst your bubble, but I actually, there's a lot of things that I would rather be talking about than Trump or how bad this country is. I mean, we're not talking right now so far about, you know, the 251,000 COVID deaths. We're not talking about what the impact is on communities. I mean, we're not talking about some of the international events going on, particularly as you know, some of the crises that we're seeing develop in Asia and Africa. So trust me, there's an awful lot to talk about other than this man baby.
Chris?
We seem to have a lot to talk about before Trump. Remember those days when it was Obama we talked about? Any president, any person in power, including Cuomo, is subject to criticism and discussion by the public. So that's just a really stupid letter.
Yeah, we've been doing the show, well, we've been doing the roundtable for 20 years, but we've been doing the panel for like 8 years. We had a lot to talk about before then. And God knows it would be lovely to get back to it. We used to talk about new innovations in science, and we used to talk about things that studies about our smell and taste, and that's all gone out the window. But anyway, let's see. We go to Russ, who says, why are there about a half dozen agencies involved in election security? Why does the DHS need assistance to ensure its own electronic security? why were the monies Congress sent to the states to buy security software for their polling operations not enough? Doesn't it seem that there are 20 offices set up to advise agencies on their security? That's Russ's question. Do you have an answer, Bob?
Yeah, I do, actually. While there are multiple different agencies, CISA is the lead on the cybersecurity element. Some of the other agencies involved are more investigatory or dealing with threats. So you start to see folks like the FBI might be involved in this security. There's also language in the law that allows agencies like the Secret Service and the Postal Police to be involved, particularly if you start to think about mail-in ballots. But CISA and Krebs's organization was the focal point for the cybersecurity systems. Now, the question about money, I don't think that enough money was put into the electoral system. I've said this for a while, that I thought more resources needed to be there. I'm also pretty sure that there were bills that were passed by the House that died on a table veto because of Mitch McConnell. But they are, CISA and Krebs's organization is the lead organization, and the others are there to support them.
We got this from Valerie, who says, I sit and listen to the news every day and wonder just who is paying for all the Cheeto-in-Chief's lawsuits. Is it us, the taxpayers, Donald himself? Is this just one more way that our soon-to-be-gone president continues to rip off the American people? Thanks for all you do, Valerie.
Well, you know, I wanted to get in on that.
You're paying for it.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to get in on that because I genuinely think with the Krebs firing, and Bob, I'm very interested in what you or Chris Rosemary have to say about this, which is that, you know, he files so many spurious lawsuits. Some of them, it seems to me, we have a constitution. The man has sworn to uphold the constitution. Seems to me an argument could be made that he's not doing that. I'd like to see Krebs sue him. I have a feeling at least some judge might say you're right, and see what happens if it goes to the court, and see what those folks up there have to say after swearing that they were that they had integrity before their hearings.
I must say, I deep down internally love that idea. What would he get out of it though?
Well,
I
think it's
worked out for McCabe, the FBI guy. He also sued for wrongful firing, but I don't know what the outcome was.
Yeah, but they're slightly different. I mean, Chris, the problem with Chris's position, Alan, is that he serves, that position is a Senate-confirmed presidential appointment. That position serves at the pleasure of the president, which means that the president can terminate somebody without any cause. Where you start to get into issues of cause and due process is when you start to get into the civil service, which was also one of the reasons that Trump is trying to undermine the senior executive service and the civil protections for federal employees, so that he could have sort of carte blanche to fire whomever he wants. So I think there's a bunch of I know there's a bunch of case law out there that is really strong that says that the president has every right to terminate just at a whim. So
you
won't win a case.
You're completely right, because McCabe also was a Senate confirmed seat and served at the pleasure, and he filed suit for a wrongful termination, that the cause cited by the president was incorrect, and that would be similar to what Krebs could do.
He was fired in March of 2018. The suit was filed in August of 2019. And as of October 1st, 2020, McCabe was the suit moved ahead after a judge denied the request by the Justice Department to dismiss the case.
Dismiss.
So
you
it
know,
is moving forward.
You know,
I wouldn't bet on it. That's all I'm telling you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alan?
No, you're quite right, Bob. I wouldn't bet on it, but I still think it's worth doing, number one. Number two, things have moved along. I mean, this country, I'm sorry for sounding like a broken record, but this country faces the possibility of, for the first time, of the peaceful transference of power being ripped out right from under us. And I think that there is a constitutional responsibility on the part of the president to make sure that that doesn't happen. Now, what happened before is what happened before. But now I have a feeling our courts might be in a mood to say, you know, you have an obligation. You raised your hand. You said you were going to follow the law, Mr. President, and you're not doing it. And let me put it this way. Even if a single judge says it, it can't hurt.
No, can I, about the lawsuits, it's the campaign that's paying for the lawsuits. And, you know, in a way, I think we should be very glad that these lawsuits are happening, because what's great about going to court is that you have to provide evidence of what you're claiming. And it actually bothers me, and we've seen this from a lot of, you know, elected officials, where they claim that that the election was stolen from them, and then they don't go to court. Going to court, and we've seen that the claims that they make, the Trump administration is making, or the Trump campaign is making in court, are not at the same level that they're making publicly. And it shows you how shallow their arguments are. And we're seeing in case after case, judges dismissing their claims. And this is a good thing. I mean, this is the way you refute conspiracies. This is the way the system is supposed to work. So I'm not going to, you know, be upset about the lawsuits. I actually think they're, in many ways, are very positive. Very positive.
Yes, okay, that's fine. I agree. But what about the other way? Well, you know, this guy sues everybody for everything. He makes a point doing that.
And these are kind of the election version of slap suits, right, which is, you know, these kind of frivolous lawsuits. But at least they're coming. There is a resolution, right? It's better that these suits be filed than.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump is going to claim that the election was stolen no matter what happens, but their inability to provide evidence of voter fraud is really, I think, the important story.
Yeah, and Alan, I think you make a great point too. If you think about it, so Trump bankrupted a casino, he bankrupted a university, he bankrupted an airline, he bankrupted a state company, and now he's bankrupted the country. I mean, this is completely in keeping with how the legal Ponzi scheme this man has run for his professional career. It's completely in keeping with the way he rolls. So, I don't know what the end result is, but you know, eventually I believe that legal karma is going to catch up with them.
If any of you get to, I'm not saying that there's anything funny about any of this, but if you do get to read the transcript of Rudy Giuliani's court appearance yesterday in Pennsylvania, Williamsport, Pennsylvania, making his case for widespread voter fraud and basically at one point wanting the entire Commonwealth's votes dismissed, it is really something to read.
Is there anything that stands out with you, Joe?
Yeah, the standout is the judge saying, I think you're unaware of basic legal principle. and asking the last time that he had, as all this was coming out, because I think it's been, what, 12 years since he's argued a case in court.
Yeah.
And all of this, of course, comes out as the New York Times reports, he's receiving $20,000 a day.
$2,000 an hour.
$2,000 an hour, and he's working 10 hours
he
a day.
He says he's working 10 hours.
Right, right. Right. Well, that's what he's billing. He's billing $20,000 a day. And, they're certainly getting, well, and obviously the president has a good reputation of paying off his debts. So there you go. That's where we are. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue. There's a lot more to talk about. We'll get into it when we come back. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Bob Griffin. We are very happy to have you with us. And we have letters. Let's go to those before. Yeah, go ahead.
Joe, before you go, just one other comment that and Rosemary is absolutely correct about payment by the campaign. But this is also why I was so concerned when Attorney General Barr sent the instructions to the prosecutors about going after fraud, because in my mind, that was him trying to be able to insert taxpayer attorneys into some of these situations, with that said, I think Rosemary was completely correct that it is being paid by donations to the campaign.
I may have lost score at home, but I thought Chris was the one who made that point. Am I right, Rosemary?
I no longer recall. But he is right.
Yes.
The campaign.
If it was good information, it came from me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right. That's fine. You can claim it. I do want to.
You know, there is an important point to be made about the way that they're funding. You know, as I said last week, if you look at the way that they're raising money off this thing, a lot of that money is going into Trump's PAC, which is going to pay off his campaign debts, you know. So they're fundraising and claiming it's all for lawsuits, but a good chunk of the money is going toward other things.
And we saw, right, Rosemary, with the E. Jean Carroll lawsuit, they tried to tag that to the Justice Department and let them pay for it.
Yes.
Correct.
So, okay. Roger says, with Christopher Krebs in particular and perhaps a few others who have proven themselves worthy of being fired for doing an outstanding job, President Biden should rehire some of these credible employees. Such institutional employees are definitely needed to maintain our government. At least someone has the moral fiber to stand up to the president when he is completely wrong, immoral, and likely illegally based based on lies with deliberate attempts to undermine the peaceful transition of the peaceful transition process. Well, it'll be interesting to see.
Can I speak up a little bit for AOC's idea? I think it's extreme, you know, to cancel everyone who is connected with Trump, but there is something to that. Joe Biden was in office until just 4 years ago. He knows a slew of people just as qualified, more qualified than most of the appointees that Trump has put into place. And why would he not pick them? If you went to work for Trump, there was ample evidence that you were expected to be loyal and obedient. And that's not what I want in a government employee, and I don't think it's what Biden wants. It's what Trump wanted. So I really do think if you worked for Trump, including Krebs, you got to be able to explain that, and you have to accept what happened to you because, man, he telegraphed what he was going to do with people.
Could I respectfully, and I do mean respectfully, as always, Rosemary, respond to you and say, I don't agree. I mean, Biden has already indicated he wants he wants to serve as president of all the people. It sounds to me like there are some very decent people in there who have great concerns. They're Republicans, and they have a chance to be evaluated, not because they worked in an administration, but because of who they are.
Mm.
I'm not an extremist on this. I think it has to be a case-by-case basis. I'm upset by the woman who is refusing. She's in the GAO office. I've forgotten her name, who's refusing to certify, to ascertain the election so that Biden...
Yeah.
And she's doing it out of, loyalty to Trump and fear of being fired. Why is she being vilified? And she truly is. I listened to cable news last night. She's being turned into Cruella DeVille. losing a job... a terrible thing. And if we don't know the situation there, why is it such a horrible thing that she's doing what she thinks she has to in order to defend her job?
Because the country is in at the worst turning point it has ever been in terms of losing our democracy, our Republican democracy in this country, she doesn't have the guts of a Krebs. That's why. I mean, she should say either quit, as you have espoused so many times, or say, no, my job says I have to certify, and I'm going to certify, and let her be fired. I think that's the way it should be.
I mean, Emily Murphy is the woman's name, and she is the administrator of the Government Services Administration. So, we're talking about 60 days. So she gets fired. I mean, she's going to be out of a job in 60 days anyway. What's wrong with that of doing the right thing? I guess that's what I don't understand.
Well, we can't argue that and then disclaim all the people who are suffering because the government won't pass a COVID relief bill. 60 days is 2 rent payments. 8 food bills in the grocery store. we don't know. Again, I don't approve of what she's doing, but we are so quick to say either she should do this or she ought not to do that. We make heroes and devils out of people, it seems to me, without any consistency.
I understand your point, but I don't, there's no guarantee that she would be fired either. But go ahead, Bob.
But I mean, I will just note sardonically, Rosemary, that 60 days is a really long time, and lots can happen in 60 days. The point, though, about continuing on, though, you know, one of the great advantages that the Department of Defense has is that in the uniformed services, they have continuity of leadership. Okay, so that they know who the leaders are going to be because they know who the generals are going to be. The civilian side changes, but there's still continuity of leadership. This is also why the FBI director is supposed to have a 10-year appointment, because it's supposed to be an apolitical position that you don't want to have to retrain. So you want a continuity there. So someone like Krebs is that if you could have kept him on, there would have been continuity in this key area of cyber defense, which is exactly what you want. And in fact, in a lot of the, particularly in a lot of the agencies, you have a political appointee who's at the head, but right below it is a career civil servant. That's what I was. So my role was to provide the continuity to the next political appointee who came in. And so they tried to create a system that would allow for a more seamless transfer from one party to another. And what's happening is that by doing what he's doing, by sort of gutting some of these organizations, Trump is really impacting our ability to be up to speed on January 20th at 12:01. The other thing that I think is everybody needs to understand is that if you are a political appointee, your term, your authorities, your responsibilities, your rights go out the window as soon as Biden is sworn in.
You are right to call me out for seeming inconsistency, Bob, between saying 60 days is not a lot for the government and it is for an individual. But I would maintain that's true. The government does not operate on the same timetable or the same budget as an individual household. So 60 days for that woman is a big deal. On the other hand, I can't argue that what Trump is doing is a good thing or it's the right way to do it. It certainly is wrong, all of that. But we cannot get hysterical. I think Biden has absolutely the right attitude, which is we move on. This is inconvenient and it's not great, but we don't need him. You do not need Trump to be cooperative. I'm more concerned about this effort, which seemed to fail in Philadelphia last night, but they were really trying. And they have been deployed to move election decisions to the state legislature, which in Pennsylvania would have been a flip from a Democrat to a Republican.
Terrible.
And it worked last night, but man, that came really close. Who even knew about these canvassers and auditors and certifying elections?
Was that in Michigan? Michigan, right?
It's Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah. Yes, Michigan.
It was Philadelphia. Wasn't it Philadelphia? Yes. Oh, you're right.
No, that was a different case.
Yeah, different
Wayne
case.
County.
Right. There are so many, but this particular one where they switched was in Wayne County, which of course is Detroit. And there's four election canvassers, two are Democrats, two are Republicans. They voted. The two Democrats said yes. The results, which I think Biden was ahead, 300,000 votes in that particular district. And they said, yes, we're going to go ahead with this. The Republicans had said no. The Washington Post broke that story. All hell broke loose. And within an hour and a half, they had another vote. And lo and behold, they approved the election results.
I think it's important for us to figure out what that means, all hell broke loose. Did people go to the street and protest? Did certain powerful individuals call and talk to them? Because that was a real power play. And if that had worked, it would have been used elsewhere. Who even knew that that could happen? And so the protest was important. And I don't understand what exactly that meant. What was the outburst? What made them change their mind?
Go ahead, Alan.
I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. This guy has no bottom. He will go wherever he has to. His people will go wherever they have to. And in this case, Joe, you make a very valid point. They almost got away with it. So, don't tell me that's the last time in the next 60 days we're going to see that kind of power play, because it ain't.
Well, and when we come back, and we do have to take a break, but when we come back, I really want to talk about what Lindsey Graham's doing. I want to talk about pressure that they're putting on the Georgia Secretary of State. More about this case in Michigan, because, the all hell breaks loose seems to be that there were a lot of Republican officials who came out at the state level and said, this is not good. This is not what it should be. And again, they were asking the question of, okay, if you're not going to prove the results, why, and where's the evidence?
When the Republicans stand up and they congratulate Kamala Harris on her coming vice presidency in the Senate, we're beginning to see some schism in the ranks.
All right. Let's take a
break. And Joe, yes. I saw this real quick. I saw a great tweet, and it said, I'm looking forward to the Biden administration, so I don't need to know who my postmaster general is. And we can talk about that when we get back.
Yeah, that would be nice. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a great group this morning. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Bob Griffin will return after news with Ray Graff. 4 minutes past 10 o'clock. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. We have a wonderful panel, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So we have a lot of letters. I want to go through these, and then we'll move on to some of the things that we were talking about just before the break. Many of these letters will get us talking about those as well. Kathy says, funding for the federal government expires December 11th. Given Trump's failure to accept Biden's win, no additional funding for states and individuals impacted by COVID-19 and the Electoral College vote scheduled for December 14th. What do you think Nancy Pelosi should do about the CR?
I think what she should do is that she should just roll it over till January and allow the Biden team to come in and start putting together their budget priorities.
Sure. That's what a CR is.
Yeah.
All right.
CR stands for continuing resolution, too, in case anybody doesn't speak all of the federal government.
Doesn't speak federal government.
Well said. And as long as I'm discussing something extraneous, we got a letter earlier today, Joe, which said that they wanted discussion on what the governor of New York is doing and others. And I sat here and I just listened to our news. And I just want to say how proud I am of our news division and what they're doing and putting out all of this information. People may not want to hear it, but they should hear it. And we're doing the job and we're getting great credit for it. And I know it's self-serving to say this, but congratulations.
Absolutely.
To our wonderful news division.
Absolutely. And you can hear all their fine reporting at midday on Midday Magazine today at noon on WAMC. Let's see. We go to Carrie, who says, Rosemary, my understanding of the blowback at the certification meeting is that it came from the public. They opened the discussion for public comment, and they got over an hour of people calling in to complain about the Republican behavior. Democracy at work?
That's what I want to know. Did they had a public hearing? I thought they made the vote and then just ended it, but you may be right. If it's just a phone call, that's great.
That was go ahead.
I mean, they got blowback from across the country, and also they got blowback from state officials in Michigan. Mm-hmm. I mean, the blowback was kind of universal. It was kind of across the board thing.
And bipartisan. I mean, it was both Democrats and Republicans saying this is ridiculous. Yeah. Emily Murphy's transgressions didn't start with refusing to permit Biden's team transition funds and resources. She's also the person who approved Trump's lease on the U.S. Post Office in spite of the obvious conflict of interest. She's just another Trump hack. That from Bob. Alan says, is there any reason the fired senior personnel can't be hired as consultants by Biden? I think we did answer that one. Rosemary, are you kidding me? Emily Murphy is a cowardly lackey who's endangering national security and the health of all Americans. She's just following orders. Defense didn't work at Nuremberg, and it doesn't work now. She should never. I'm reading this the way I'm reading this because it's all in capital letters. It's all shouty caps. She should never work in.
I'm getting some personal notes about this too, and you know I agree. I'm the one who calls for dramatic gestures from everyone in the Trump administration, including Dr. Fauci. Alan and I have discussed that many times. But in this case, what I'm objecting to is the way she has been vilified by the media and other people. And what she has done is not worse than what others, men, in Trump's purview and his employ have gotten away with much more evenly. You know, his former Secretary of Defense left, and that was also a matter of he wanted to pull out and troops in a dangerous way, which he's doing again. All kinds of Social Security, put troops on the border for police action. And he left and didn't say any bad things about Trump for a really long time. And yet you did not hear him being called all these names that you're calling her. Why? Why?
Well, all I got to say is two wrongs don't make a right. They never have. They never will. She's bad. They're bad. But there are some good people there. And I think everybody has to stand up and be counted for what they have or haven't done. We don't even know what everybody's doing in the administration. There may be people who are in their agencies and who are very discomforted by this and who are saying things, and we don't even know about it yet. Somebody should know.
So right, that's why I was arguing that painting them all with a broad brush is just wrong, because we don't know what they're doing behind the scenes.
Well, you know, you're not always right, but you are now.
And quite frankly, Chris, we're all thrilled about that, finally. Hold on, Bob, and then Rosemary, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but this is why the delay in the transition team's access to each of these agencies is so important. Okay, because part of what the transitions team start to do is they start to collect these issues. They start to get a better handle on what exactly is going on within the workings of the organizations. And every week that goes by, it makes it harder and harder to have a smooth transition. And I understand we're putting a good spin on it and Biden's I think acting as an adult, but it's going to significantly affect the transition.
And Biden has made it clear it's going to cost lives. He said so.
Yes.
I mean, it's not as if he says, oh, this is okay. He says, no, for every moment we're stopping, we're losing lives. And he is right.
But again, while it's not optimal by any means, it is not the end of the world. For example, the State Department has been hollowed out. Trump does not need to go into the Trump State Department to figure out where there are empty ambassadorships and start finding qualified people. That's something that could be happening now, and it's very important. There are tasks that can be done before this vote is certified by the electors, and then the transition begins in earnest.
How does the panel feel about Brian's letter? Brian writes, I believe what we are witnessing is the death of the Republican Party. Is there any quick legal way that any of you know and get rid of Donald Trump for these obvious mental issues? He is a danger to our country and our security. Okay, but how...
You know what that... We know the answer to that is impeachment and the 25th Amendment. The 25th Amendment, everybody, please do me a big favor. Go read the 25th Amendment. It's not hard to get. You can get it on your phone and you'll see it's almost impossible with the people who are sitting where they're sitting right now.
So, go ahead.
But Joe, before you go on, I mean, my issue with the letter is, as much as I'd like to say yes, I mean, I'm looking at 73 million people that supported
Trump.
That's
exactly what I was going to say.
You know,
yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. How many people supported Hitler? Is that?
I'll look that number
but
up.
But don't you get it? I mean, you understand? Or is?
Oh yes,
as Festus would say, don't you see?
Yes.
Well, the broader point, though, is that the Republican Party did fine on election day.
Well, that's
actually, actually, if you look closely at the results, in most places, or many places anyways, the Republican down ballot candidates actually did better than President Trump. So you know, the Republican Party is alive and well.
Yeah. I think that's true.
Chuck says,
which made all these arguments about the elections being fixed or stolen is such a it's so stupid. It's like if they weren't, but if they were, then they should have done it better than they did. Because come on, I mean, the down tickets did really well.
It makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, we're talking about Wayne County as some place where Republicans are talking about Wayne County as some place where fraud supposedly happened. But if you look at the results, Trump did better there than any Republican since, well, you know, something like the late 1980s. The argument makes no sense. Or if it is fraud, it's the most subtle fraud anyone's ever seen. Because,
yeah, you know, and that was a point that was made in court yesterday in both Michigan and Pennsylvania, that one or two abnormalities doesn't mean widespread fraud. And back to Lindsey Graham for a moment. And can we ever talk enough about Lindsey Graham? That he is trying to unravel these results by calling states and basically trying to get believing that the vote was rigged, and so calling up the states and saying, all right, what can we throw out?
Yeah. You know, Lindsey Graham is the Rudy Giuliani of the Senate. And if I could quote, if I could steal Jimmy Fallon's line, you know, Lindsey Graham is close to a dog as Donald Trump has ever had.
Yeah, that's a good that's a good point.
It wasn't my line, but it's a good one.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is that John Heilman was on the 11th hour with Brian Williams last night and said the fun thing will be to watch that Lindsey Graham is really good at whatever Lindsey Graham wants. So, in other words, when Biden is back in charge or is in charge, then Lindsey Graham is going to be at the White House and wanting to be there for movie night, and it's going to be different because it's what he does. The argument he was making is he'll suck up to Trump as long as he's in office, and then when he's not, he'll suck up to the next person who is in office. But it does seem to me that this last gasp of calling up states and wondering, and Alan was talking about lawsuits, and you just do wonder of what is the legally, what does that mean for a South Carolina senator to call up a Georgia Secretary of State and discussing what ballots can be dismissed?
Yeah, I mean, the call is completely inappropriate, right? I mean, right off the bat, it's just he has no legitimate role to be calling these people. I will say, though, that the conversation between him and Brad Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State, I mean, that is disputed. They both have different accounts of what was said, and it doesn't make much sense. I don't really understand why.
Hold on.
Within.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, that witness apparently heard only part of the conversation, though. Correct.
Well, I didn't hear what Rosemary said.
I just
said
don't know why
Lindsey
Graham would do it. I guess is the point, because I mean, even if he overturned the Georgia result, it still doesn't make a difference. The election, it wouldn't have any impact on the overall election.
If he gets one, he'll get another. He's a man of bad character. It's that simple.
So the debate was. I'll just fill in for listeners who may not be aware, but as the Lindsey Graham called the Secretary of State in Georgia, Mr. Raffensperger. So Raffensperger says that basically, and a Republican, by the way, we should note he is a Republican state Secretary of State, received the call from Lindsey Graham and said that his telling of the story is that Graham asked him what votes could be dismissed from the recount that is taking place and expected to be completed by midnight tonight. The argument, Lindsey Graham's argument and his side of the story is he called to make sure what could be done to ensure that all votes are counted in a more coherent fashion in the Senate and the upcoming Senate race to Rosemary's point of there being a third party, there was a witness to the phone call in Raffensperger's office who said, yeah, they're actually both right. Both things were discussed. So, but it's still, it still comes down to me anyway as a question of why is, and to Alan's point, why is a senator from South Carolina getting involved not only in a Georgia election, but in a Nevada election, an Arizona election, a Wisconsin election, and a Michigan election?
There's more to it, too. One more piece of evidence. It was such a clumsy lie. He said, the future of the country is at stake, so I also called up Arizona and Nevada. So last night, the Secretary of State of Nevada is on TV, and she goes, I never got a phone call from him. He never discussed this with me. He outright lied about that. So you put that together with what Raffensperger said, and he's been standing up to pressure from the two incumbent Republican senators from that state and now Lindsey Graham. So you put that together. You put that together with the witness statement, which certainly supports both of them but doesn't disprove Raffensperger, and with the Secretary of State of Nevada. And Lindsey Graham is caught in a lie. It's a clumsy lie.
First thing that ought to happen is Raffensperger ought to get the highest civilian award the United States has because of, I'm not kidding, because of what this is. I mean, I don't think a lot of people understand what's at stake with Trump trying to seize power here, which he certainly is doing.
You know, we actually need to come up with a new award because that award was given to Rush Limbaugh, so I don't think it has
much
standing anymore.
I agree with you, but we've got to defumigate it.
All right.
Back. This goes back a few years, but remember when Father Guido Sarducci did the whole exorcism of Fenway Park because they hadn't won so many years? I almost feel like we need to have something like that done at the White House and Congress.
Good idea.
All right. Let's go back to letters. Tony writes, would it be possible for the Biden administration to investigate Trump's and Graham's Georgia interference? Well, we were just talking about that. I mean, it is possible, but will he do it?
He won't do it. He won't do it. He said he won't do it. He said he doesn't want to investigate. He doesn't want to spend his time investigating Trump, which, of course, leaves open the idea that New York State will. And whether or not Biden reaches down in New York State and says, OK, guys, cut it out. You know, there's a big difference between the state and federal government. Nevertheless, both will be run by Democrats. I'd hate to see that happen because I really, really want to see this, all of these things pursued.
There's so much work the Department of Justice needs to do as far as policing. You think about the whole Black Lives Matters and has gone on. You know, the whole Civil Rights Division needs to be rebuilt. At the end of the day, Lindsey Graham could just look at people and say, I'm an American citizen. I have a right to call whoever I want. But it's
well, he's also isn't he chair of judiciary?
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
So, you know, he's hiding behind that also. He's hiding behind that also. But we all know what he's up to.
Yeah. Okay. Zach says, can you explain how Republicans will keep the Senate gain seats in the House of Representatives, yet they are projected to lose the presidential race?
It's all about Trump.
Yeah, people hate Trump.
This was a referendum on Trump. That's what it was. And I, by the way, what I'm worried about is how few votes separated them. I mean, look, it was enough so that, you know, Biden clearly won. But I'm still worried about the fact that people don't get what was being threatened here.
Right. And there were so bless you. And there were so many. I mean, there were so many
allergic
more votes for both. There was such record turnout. Trump. Is it nine? I've heard different numbers. It's between 7 and 9 million more votes than he received in 2016.
Well, it speaks, Joe, to the sociology of the United States. Groups which are on top, and which do not want to see a change in the way in which all citizens are treated. I really believe that. I think that's what this election is about.
Chuck says enough of this. Go ahead, Bob.
I just think it's also a warning shot across the bow of the Democrats that people are really concerned about moving too far to the left. So I think as we start to think about the new Green Deal and we start to think about what policies are going to be put in place, that they have to keep an eye on this. I mean, a message was sent with this election.
I agree. And Rosemary made a very interesting point about AOC and what her demands are right now. That's not going to help things.
Yeah, I agree with Bob. I think you can look at this election and say one message that voters sent was that they
are kind of tired of extremism, right? They're tired of both Trump and some of the voices on the left that are just, you know, unreasonable, frankly. And, I think it's kind of hopeful in that way that, you know, there is still a kind of a moderate middle in the country.
I take it you hear, Chris.
Largely rejected some of what Trump is saying. Go ahead.
I take it, Chris, you hear from the same people I hear from the left of the Democratic Party who are furious that we're not moving forward and doing things like decertifying the police and everything else, and who really believe it. You gave them a lie detector test and you'd get a flat line.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Biden, the fact that Biden was the nominee was kind of a rejection of a lot of that, too, right? I mean, it was black voters that were largely responsible for his nomination. And I think, you know, a great majority of those voters really dislike ideas like defund the police.
Chuck, defund the police is just toxic. For good reason.
It's a toxic political idea.
For good reason. I mean, if there's any prejudice involved in all of this, it's that our black citizens don't get the protection that they need.
Right.
Let's go to, Susan's letter. Is the court changing the campaign? I'm sorry, is the court charging the campaign for their costs back to the campaign? If not, taxpayers are paying for these court costs. Chuck says enough of...
Actually, Joe, that's a really good point, because if you think about it, taxpayers are paying to every state and local government that needs to go into court to defend themselves. That is being paid for by taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. The cases themselves are being brought by the attorneys that are being paid for, the Trump attorneys that are being paid by the campaign. But the taxpayers are footing part of the bill on this thing.
We go to Chuck, who says to us, enough of the per-state patchwork of different voting laws. It's time for national voting standards and laws that uniformly apply across states. It'll take a constitutional amendment, so good luck with that. But we really need it, says Chuck.
Yeah, we really need it.
If we're going to do that, why don't we take out the Electoral College?
Right.
John says, computers operate on a time scale measured in nanoseconds. 60 days is plenty of time to wreak havoc on cyber systems and or networks.
Yep.
Ken says, while I am pleased that the election was honest, I think that the bigger point is missing in the self-congratulation. That is the misinformation that was spewed out prior to the election that influenced voters in the months before the vote. What about the Russian trolls on Facebook?
Good. You know, point. I have this one lady who keeps writing me. I know this is nasty, and I'm sorry. I apologize for it in advance. She writes me a very pro-Trump person and calling me all kinds of names. And I wanted to say, what's your name in Russian?
Does anyone have a problem with Alan writing that letter? I don't think. Go for it. Yeah, go for it. Bob, could you attempt to explain to Rosemary, how Academy...
Oh, I love being mansplained. Yeah, let's hear this one.
Oh,
hell.
Now, by the way,
trouble,
this wasn't
Watch
Bob's
it.
Idea. This is Quinn's idea.
Yeah.
All right. Bob, could you attempt to explain to Rosemary how catastrophic it would be if our electrical grid was attacked and shut down for any amount of time, notwithstanding the fact that we are currently in a global pandemic. I don't know if that's necessary. I think Rosemary understands that. But Bob, how would you like to gingerly answer that question?
I think I need to go get a cup of coffee.
Okay.
Rosemary, all of our critical infrastructure is critical. And
of course, yeah. I mean, we don't disagree on this, but what I'm saying is that it's not all dependent on the one or two guys at the top. If our electrical system really depends on that, we're in worse trouble than just having Trump wrecking the whole government. That said, yes, of course, other countries are going to try to exploit it, and Trump should be impeached or held accountable for this. But he won't be. We know he won't be. That's what Biden has already been saying. We're going to just move on. So in a way, he's getting away with it, and that makes me crazy. And that's why I don't want us blathering on about how horrible it is. It's insurmountable, because we are feeding into exactly the sort of thing that Trump loves the most.
All right. So,
and building off of Rosemary's wonderful description or explanation to me, I would just add that there are other things to think about, too. Like every contract that is written right now and in the next 60 days has the power of the federal government behind it. And in order for the next administration to undo those contracts, you're going to end up in court and the taxpayers are going to end up paying. I mean, there's an awful lot of
giant baloney right to that, Bob. Look at, we got out of the Paris Peace Pact. We got out of the Pacific Rim trade deal, NAFTA.
No.
If Trump could undo all of those deals, he can certainly undo some last minute rigged deals to do drilling and logging in the Arctic.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Rosemary, you're absolutely incorrect. You're absolutely incorrect. That's not true. And you can't put a treaty in the same category as a procurement effort. I'm sorry, I completely disagree with you on that.
But I'm still concerned because maybe it's my bad ears. But Rosemary, you said a huge giant caroni. What was that? What words did you use?
What?
I don't know what.
Oh, huge giant baloney, I said.
Huge giant baloney.
That Biden cannot undo these ridiculous measures that Trump is undertaking in his last month.
I always want to know new words.
I think Biden can undo all of them. Yes, it will take money and can go to court, but we'll save all that money from not taking Trump and his family to the golf courses and hunting trips. So we got money to spare for these wonderful suits.
Kathleen writes, in keeping up with the awkwardness amongst the panel, Trump is burning down the House, and who does Chris Churchill go after? AOC. He just can't help himself, can he? Trump is the villain here, but hey, let's smear a Democrat.
Wait, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair at all. I'm standing up for Chris.
Yeah, thank you.
I think this is a great letter. Let's keep on this one.
I think it's a giant caroni.
Bob, will you mansplain to Chris of why that's a bad thing? Darcy, how much?
Yes. as I'm still in a fetal position under my desk from the last letter.
All right. Actually, let's see. We have time for one more, I guess. Elsa says the president is being The president isn't supposed to tell the DOJ who to investigate anyway. They're supposed to be independent. Isn't that what Biden is inferring? Okay. Yes.
Well, yes, he is. And tell that to John Mitchell and Nixon, too, while you're at it.
Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Go to the last round with our panel this morning. Rosemary Allen, Chris, and Robert. We will be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our last go-round here, last moments together. We welcome, just for today, we're not like, you know, we'll be back tomorrow. Alan, Rosemary, Chris, and Bob, we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Teresa writes to us and says, stop with it. No serious voice on the left, including Bernie, has called to defund the police. There is a valid argument to reallocate some resources towards social services so that police are not sent into situations that can be diffused without violence. Stop reinforcing the lie, says Teresa. We get another letter from Cheryl on a similar matter, which says, what do you all mean by left? Quote unquote, the U.S. would do well to move a little more left, move a little closer to a Green New Deal, police restraint and reform and electoral reform. You need to have a little more left on your panel. Oh, I'm going to use your letter in response to many of the other letters we get.
There's a first.
Guys are aren't left enough. Ken says, according to various sources, the Michigan situation was orchestrated by one of the Republican canvassers who has had ethics charges filed against her for involvement with another election PAC. Her charges brought strong condemnation from the Michigan NAACP, among others, at a hearing that was part of the hell that broke loose.
Cool.
All right. Yes, cool indeed. Maureen says, please explain how trying to save our planet is a leftist policy. Anyone want that one?
By the question, by the gag, Johnny Carson said. Whoever said it wasn't. I mean, the fact of the matter is we know that we should clean up our environment. Responsible people are all for it. I think that the Green New Deal is a great way of going in terms of what we're at least heading to. And while Biden may have his objections to using it because of the implications for his election, I'm sure he's going to be heading that way.
All right. Let's see. Anyone else?
Go back to an earlier letter. I mean, I don't want to be accused of smearing AOC again, but she did say earlier this year that defunding police means defunding police. It does not mean budget tricks or funny math. You know, there are people on the left who are calling for defunding the police, including her. And I think that this election proved that that's kind of a toxic idea.
Anybody?
At least to the people who are casting votes, Chris. I mean, you know, this is an election that had to be won. There are still those people. I'm not going to characterize them where they stand on the political spectrum, who would rather lose the election to make the point. And that is nuts at this point.
I also think, you know, one of the nice things about a feisty panel like we have right now is that it gives everybody some different views and opportunity to think. And nothing is ever ubiquitous. So this idea of just accepting the Green New Deal, there are elements of it that I really don't like and I don't support. And frankly, I do think that the comment that Biden made at the end of the debate about the oil and gas industry really hurt him in some key areas. So I appreciate the letter, but at the same time, I also appreciate the fact that, like, as a panel, we can agree to disagree on some of the nuances of these policy decisions.
All right, let's go back to
Bob and Chris are wrong all the time, and I still like them.
Right. I was just waiting for the cuckoo clock to go off when you said that.
And that's no giant Caroni either.
And I will remember that this panel is Chris, Rosemary, Alan, and Bob, so it's crab, which is kind of crabby, which is kind of what we've been today. So, it's a crab group.
Forget that, but it always fascinates me how Bob's mind works.
It's a scary, dark, scary place, Joe.
Let's see. I think I read this one. Yes, I did. So Darcy says, that's kind of a smart alecky one, but how much disinfecting for COVID will be done at the White House before the new administration and family come in? Well, I guess it's not so snarky, but it a question.
You better believe there will be.
Yeah, I think there would be a deep clean, yes. How was Trump able to host a more secure election than Obama did in 2016? Why and how did he stop the Russians from helping him? Is that a fair question, Bob?
Yeah, it is a fair question because we recognized in 2016 vulnerabilities that we didn't address in defense of DHS and Krebs's organization, that they've worked really hard for the past 4 years to improve the capacity and safety of the system. So they learned, which is something that should be celebrated.
But Bob, it's important to note too, isn't it, that there is no evidence that the Russians actually hacked into voting systems. I mean, that's a kind of a wide, we've talked a lot about conspiracy theories on the right today, but that's a conspiracy theory on the left that has no basis in fact too, correct?
Well, wait. Are you telling me that this president, who hasn't had a bad word to say about Vladimir Putin, not a bad word, who has said we're going to stop this Russian thing when he fired Comey, there isn't, Chris, you're not concerned that he's in bed
with
this
guy?
No,
I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the voting, the election results themselves. I mean, there's... If you looked at opinion polls after the 2016 election, there was a widespread belief among Democrats that the Russians actually changed election results, and there's no evidence for that. And the letter seems to be.
But there was evidence of break-ins to state-level systems. There was hacking into several state systems, and they were key states.
But no evidence that voting totals were changed, as far as I'm aware.
It did, and I think you're right, Chris. And let me sort of put a finer point on that. Because of other examples of Russian interference, they really did a deep dive into the systems afterwards, which helped make them better and safer now. But no, I'm not saying that the 2016 election was stolen by the Russians or it was invalid. It wasn't. It was absolutely. It was as legitimate as the 2020 election.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an important point because there's both, you know, we can't get into this back and forth where every election that's lost is claimed to be illegitimate by the losing side, right? And that seems to be a pattern we're falling into. And I just think it's important to, whenever possible, point out that these elections are legitimate, at least in my opinion.
I think that they are all vulnerable. It doesn't give me any comfort at all to say 2020 was as good as 2016. They were both faulty. We don't put enough money into the systems. There's not backup in several states. The systems are hackable, whether by Russians or by any other, you know, kids wanting to play with results. We have problems in our electoral system, and proclaiming it wonderful is not the way to get them fixed.
All right, I'm not proclaiming it wonderful, but I'm just saying there's been no evidence that voting totals have been changed. We should do everything. We should be as vigilant as possible and do everything we can to make sure they're
right.
Even more secure. I'm not trying to suggest otherwise, but I just think it's important to continue to stress that when elections are legitimate, they're legitimate.
Well, let's take a few moments. Go ahead, Bob.
We're just sending our kids such a terrible message about what you do when you don't get what you want. I mean, if you're
exactly,
you know, this idea that, you know, it's always somebody else's fault. It's not. I mean, this is a sore loser, and this is a terrible way for people, you know, especially young people growing up, to think that this is how you resolve your own personal failures in the future.
Don't you?
Right. You never. You didn't
right.
lose a Little League game. You were cheated. You know. That's. Yeah. That's what we're teaching.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see. I want to spend our last 5 minutes together by going over, of all people, Mitch McConnell, who's mad at the president. Who could think that would happen? Slamming the president over the rapid withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, said yesterday that would hurt our allies and delight the people who wish us harm. The remarks came as the White House has instructed the Pentagon to begin planning for significant drawdown of U.S. troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. A defense official told Politico that under the proposal, just 2,500 American troops would remain in each country by January 15th, just 5 days before President-elect Joe Biden takes office. Currently, there are 4,500 to 5,000 troops in Afghanistan and around 3,000 in Iraq. What do we make of Senator McConnell's remarks?
That's not all. I mean, obviously, he's taken the shackles off of the Republican senators who are now beginning to put a little distance between themselves and Trump and congratulate, for example, the vice president as she leaves the Senate, the vice president elect as she leaves the Senate. It seems to me that there is a growing distance between the McConnell, who is hardly a hero, and this president.
Rosemary or Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really worried about this because the drawdown and the dates of the drawdown are so fast that it's almost impossible not to think that this is jeopardizing our service people. This is going to create a huge vacuum because what you want to do is you want to do an orderly withdrawal. So you're handing power back to the Iraqis and Afghanistans by forcing everybody to pack up and move tomorrow. They're not going to be prepared, which is going to leave the opportunity for Al Qaeda and ISIS and other foreign powers, including Iran and Russia, to move in. And frankly, I think we're going to end up having to go back and fix this problem. This is really bad policy.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've been in favor of pulling the troops out for a long time, but you have to do it in an orderly and thoughtful way. You just don't do it in the waning days of an administration to fulfill a campaign promise that you failed to fulfill in the previous 4 years. You know, I mean, I think Bob's right. this does put people in danger, and this does leave kind of the people who have been supporting us in these countries kind of out on a limb in precarious places.
We have a minute and a half, Rosemary. Would you like the final word?
I'll say that. Well, again, to get back to the original point, I don't think this means anything as far as McConnell is concerned. You remember he also went against Trump about sanctions against Russia too.
Right.
That did not signal that he was going to pull away from him in any broad sense, and I don't see that happening now. This is his thing, is that we have to treat our troops carefully. And once again, the timetable is so short and so weird. I just don't see it really happening. 5 days before January 20th, come on. They can say we need extra time to do X, Y, or Z, and it has to be granted. They can move just out of the borders of where they are and then go back in as soon as Biden is there. This is again, something I think is fungible that could be manipulated by Biden.
All right. We are out of time. I want to thank everybody who wrote in, and I want to thank our wonderful panelists. Alan, thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Rosemary Arimeo, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a great morning, and we'll be back right after this.